Hi, everybody. Ronnie Dockery is my name. I'm a senior product manager in Microsoft. Welcome to Microsoft Virtual Academy. In this session, we're going to talk about MDOP and AppV. It's really a deep dive on AppV, application virtualization. I'd like to introduce to my right Steve Thomas, who's a senior Microsoft consultant in our consultancy group. And Steve actually focuses on AppV and is probably one of our biggest brains in terms of troubleshooting and working with our major customers. So he's our encyclopedia of AppV. So I've asked Steve today to kind of give some of his insights and learnings from the field in terms of deployment and managing and configuring and troubleshooting AppV. Okay, so before I start, I'd like to actually first talk about what MDOP is and how AppV sits into the whole space of Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. Okay, so the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack is a suite of five products. And really, it's come from a set of products that we wanted to use to help customers to enhance their experience with the Windows operating system. In today's session, we're obviously going to focus on Microsoft Application Virtualization. But I just want to give you a quick overview just to mention where it sits, right? So we have got virtualization, we've got management, and we've got restore technologies. We've about 50 million licenses actually deployed with customers who are using this product right now. And AppV has been the longest product around within that suite. I'd also like to mention customers who have RDS technology from Microsoft also have the rights to this technology as well. So a lot of you out there actually probably already own this. Okay, so let me kind of drill into it as well. In terms of the history of MDOP, MDOP is itself, the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack, it's a bit of a mouthful, has been around since 2007. And AppV was the first product in the set, right? So we purchased a company back in 2007 called Softricity, and we have enhanced their product, calling it AppV, since 2007, all the way up to the current date. And what I want to really land with you there is you can see that every year we have at least two releases of MDOP, which are constantly enhancing and providing tools for customers to get the most out of their desktop. The most recent release, I suppose, from an AppV perspective would be our December 2013 release, which was AppV 5.0 SP2. But also, actually, only recently in May, we released a spring update, which had a raft of features as well, helping customers package, sequence applications, and focusing on the virtualization space, focusing on customers who, to get the most and enhance that feature, those features in AppV, to get the most out of that, that scenarios around virtualization, pool VDI, RDS scenarios. So there's a lot of continuous enhancements and developments within AppV, as I say, ranging from 2007 up to the current date. And that's our intention. Our intention is to continue to enhance and innovate with AppV. We see it as a key component within our technology set from the desktop management. And we've even leveraged some of that technology into our office suites as well with Click to Run. So we're really, really passionate and excited about AppV and continue to innovate. Okay. So let's kind of just dig a little bit more into what AppV is. Okay. And this is purely just a 5 minute or 2 minute or just to kind of set the context on AppV. As I say, Steve will be going into the deeper level 300, level 400 in a couple of minutes. But essentially, AppV technology itself, it is originally stemmed from avoiding DLL hell or inter-application conflicts. That's where the product came from, so that as people deployed new applications in their organization, they had one application would trip up another in terms of competing for resources. But AppV avoids that. It sandboxed the application, virtualizing the application and streaming it to users and caching it locally on the machine, but avoiding the inter-application conflicts. That's where it came from originally. And it does a good job on that whole space, a great job. And that's continually being a main feature of the product. But we've actually, as we've developed it and deployed it and more customers are using it, features that really actually excite customers as well are the management capabilities of AppV. In other words, you can centrally manage the applications. You can publish them to users. You can unpublish them. You can do simple updates. But you're kind of centralizing the control of those applications for those users. So beyond just the isolation part, which is great in itself, the management component has been a big win for our customers and something that they're very interested and excited about. Okay? And then finally, just to kind of go through this is the level 100, and we'll certainly go into the level 300 now in two minutes. But essentially, in terms of what AppV looks like, you're basically allowing customers to have multiple devices and have the same experience with those devices and their applications on those devices. So if a person's using a normal PC, they're using a tablet, or they're using a thin client or any device, they can stream the application to that device, either through straight onto the device itself or via RDS type scenarios. Essentially, the idea being that no matter what device the user is using, they have the same application experience. Also, as I mentioned at the very start, UEV, or User Experience Virtualization, which is a sister product of AppFi, that kind of completes the circle there in terms of allowing people to have the same settings as well as the same applications. They have the same OS and application settings no matter what device they're using. So the idea being is that you have anywhere productivity, you have the simplified management of the device, and you're avoiding disruptions, etc., so that users are able to get to their applications, the latest version of the applications, and those applications are managed tightly for those users. Okay, so I think I'll hand over to Steve now to talk more about AppFi infrastructure configuration and get more into that level 300, level 400, and share his great knowledge of the from our customer base.
Thank you, Ronnie. So what I'm going to do now is dive into specifically the delivery system, the AppFi management delivery system, which is first and foremost one of the primary options for delivering AppFi packages to end-user clients. This is not the only way. We have several options. You can use AppFi in standalone mode. You can also leverage Configuration Manager if you want to actually set up AppFi. But for the purpose of this discussion, we're going to first look at the server features and roles of the AppFi management system and publishing system. Following that, we're going to discuss client management, managing your clients en masse through either group policy or customizing it through PowerShell. And then we're going to dive into package and connection group management, managing those packages, applications, and virtual environments. And then we're going to top it off with a great set of resources to help guide you in your path. Now, first, I want to talk about server features and roles. Now, a lot of times you might want to go ahead and test this in an environment where you just set up all the individual services on a single machine, or you might want to go ahead and put together a proof of concept where you will actually scale out your server roles on different machines. In most enterprise environments, especially environments that span multiple geographical locations, you'll probably want to actually take advantage of the scalability features of the AppFi management system. And that's going to require you having a good understanding of every single component, every single service, and every important entity to ensure that you have everything sized and placed correctly within your infrastructure. So for server roles, we're going to talk first about getting everything prepared, preparing your Active Directory environment, preparing your content directories, getting the correct permissions in place. We're going to talk about the database server. This is going to be a crucial component. We're going to talk then about the management service, how we will actually entitle these packages to individual groups, users, and machines. We're going to talk about the publishing service, which is what makes this configuration, these packages and connection groups available to end-user AppFi clients. Then we're going to talk about tracking the application usage and client usage of AppFi through the reporting service, and then talk about options for delivering content, our stream-to-disk and stream-to-memory scenarios. So first, let's go into preparation. Before putting together any type of delivery system, you want to have a good, solid understanding of the documented prerequisites. I strongly encourage you to leverage TechNet to take advantage of the prerequisites for the AppFi management system. The two primary operating system prerequisites are obviously going to be a valid operating system, 2008 R2 or later, the file and web server roles. Predominantly, file and web services make up the bulk of the AppFi management delivery system. It's also going to be very important that you properly size the environment appropriately. And, you know, one of the big asks we've had, Ronnie, over the past year is there a series of recommendations for scaling and sizing, you know, kind of a capacity planning document. And the AppFi engineering team has worked very hard at putting together this guidance. And that guidance is available on TechNet. And if you're having trouble navigating TechNet, I encourage you to go to the AppFi blog at blogs.technet.com/AppFi, because the last 10 to 12 in- blog entries have kind of focused on a lot of these recent developments, the recent white papers that we've made available, the recent hot fixes that we've had available. And one of the most desirable documents that we've had in the last year, of course, is the sizing and scalability document. You're also going to want to have a good idea of server placement and role separation. The nice thing about scaling out your infrastructure is you don't necessarily have to have services in every location. But in many cases, you will want to have some services in all of your geographical locations, or at least your regional data center clusters, primarily the publishing server, for example. But in some cases, you won't need to have services in every location, like the data store. The data store is designed for entitlements only, and since the publishing service provides the actual information directly to clients and not the database, the database doesn't need to be in every single geographical location. So server placement and role separation, a big important part of pre-planning. And then, of course, getting your appropriate security accounts and Active Directory configuration in place. This goes to setting up service accounts for your services, your appropriate groups to associate applications with and computer accounts with. A lot of this, of course, is going to depend on are you targeting machines, are you targeting users, or are you targeting both? You're probably going to want to set up specific organizational units or OUs within Active Directory if you're going to leverage, for example, group policy to control your AppV client computer configuration. You might want to maintain those computers separately with regards to configuration from some of your other servers and other computers that may not be using AppV or leveraging AppV.
So these are kind of common steps that you would have, as you engage your customers, as you distill it down, these are kind of the common things that you've done, and it's
yes,
kind of a consistent approach as you'd have with your engagements with customers on AppV.
Every deployment should have a valid checklist.
Yeah,
and a pre-planning checklist that can actually allow an administrator to kind of check off the various components. And we actually include a deployment checklist mm-hmm. on TechNet with our preparation documents for delivering AppV.
Yes.
In fact, Ronnie, that's a great segue into the next slide. Here are the key documents that I've been kind of talking about or talking around. We have our capacity planning document, which is at TechNet. And then at the Microsoft Download Center, after you've set up your environment, we also have our AppV Best Practices Analyzer. Although Ronnie will tell you that I hate the term best practice. I would much rather call it current recommended practices. However,
because it's constantly improving, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And practices are evolving. But the BPA does require a baseline configuration analyzer, mm-hmm. so you will need to install that as well. We also have a recent document that was made available after the release of Hotfix 4 for Service Pack 2 on the client side. It's some additional performance guidance for clients, particularly certain key scenarios. For example, persistent and non-persistent VDI. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're leveraging AppV in environments that may use third-party user environment management systems or our UEV product, which we prefer you use. This guidance in this performance guidance document is very valuable for planning new deployments of AppV and, of course, adjusting your existing deployments of AppV.
And just to mention on that, like, we regard that almost like a feature within the release that we did in spring.
Correct.
And I basically worked with Steve and with the engineering team, and we distilled down like what were the major like gotchas or questions that we were getting. So I would, as Steve mentioned, I strongly recommend you look at that document. Take a look.
A lot of customer feedback went into the performance guidance for Service Pack 2 Hotfix 4. The specific prerequisites, which I don't want to walk through and bore you with, are actually located in the AppV supported configurations and planning for server deployment documents as well, which are also available on TechNet. So what I want to move into next is a walkthrough of where you want to kind of get everything properly set up in advance. So here I have Active Directory, and within Active Directory, I have an OU set up for AppV where I'm having my AppV computers maintained, my particular security groups. I'll have security groups for my AtV admins, security group for my generic AtV users. I may also have some security groups targeting specific applications. For example, I may want my Office users in a specific group, my Rumba users in a specific group. All of this is designed to kind of keep synchronicity with my application publishing targeting as well. In addition, I might want to take advantage of specific service accounts. I might want to configure my actual AtV services, which actually run as web service worker processes, running under specific service accounts. For example, if I'm leveraging constrained delegation or for other reasons, maybe I want to use managed service accounts. All of that will have to be taken care of in advance of the situation. In addition, I'm going to want to have my content stores set up properly. Now, your content store can be made available over the web through the HTTP protocol or through SMB as basically a file share. I tend to prefer file share, especially in VDI data centers, because SMB is a fast protocol. However, that may not be optimal in environments that may have bandwidth limitations, for example, or may be leveraging what we call high-cost networks, even 4G networks. So what you can do is you can essentially create a uniform content structure where you actually have a content directory that is both made available through HTTP as a published web folder and at the same time made available as a network share. And of course, ensuring that you have the adequate permissions set properly is going to be very crucial. Notice here, in this case, I have my permissions set up where I have all, of course, my administrators and the necessary permissions, the actual service accounts that I'm using for my AtV management and publishing services, and then, of course, my generic access for the users who really only need read access, and, of course, my AtV admins will need, of course, change access as they need to get in and manage the content appropriately.
And sometimes will there be subdivisions within that, between departments and stuff?
It very well could be.
Yeah. So you could have the marketing department or the engineering department or the account.
Especially
finance.
If the content is segmented.
That's the thing.
Well,
yeah.
You might want to take advantage of subdirectories to segment out your applications.
Great.
And of course, on top of that, I have all my content in here. And of course, a lot of administrators like to have all of their AtV content in one location, not just packages, but hot fixes and other utilities that are necessary. So let's now talk about database configuration, especially pre-configuration. Once you have your content and your user accounts and Active Directory prepared, the next most common step in the setup process is getting the database configuration in place. And I say this because in most organizations, SQL administrators are off in their own controlled world, their own controlled atmosphere, and they like to lock down access and control their databases. And who could blame them? I mean, this is very critical information stored on these databases.
You can make a friend if it goes wrong, yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And these mission-critical databases are locked down and controlled rigidly. So what the AtV team had to do was, well, we have two methods when we are installing in a proof of concept and you've got SQL installed, possibly even on the same box. You know, you just walk through. As long as you're an admin, you can and you're using SA in SQL, you could actually just go through and the installation will generate and create this database. And that's certainly one way of doing it. But Ronnie, in the real world, it doesn't always work out that way. The SQL administrators are not going to give your account full SA rights on their SQL server. So what options do you have? Well, you have the option of giving the media to the actual SQL administrator and doing a UI installation. Or you can give them SQL scripts to allow them to pre-create these databases. We have two ways to pre-create what we call the AtV management database and the AtV reporting database. Now, for those of you who have used AtV in the past, AtV 4, we had a single database. We now have two databases. So the UI installation, Ronnie, is the best approach, in my opinion, because it just minimizes a lot of potential errors. However, the SQL script is actually the most preferred by SQL administrators. The most important thing to remember about the SQL scripts is the SQL scripts that we provide with the AtV media do not contain the appropriate security principles that you're going to need to include, which is going to take some intervention on your part. Whereas a UI installation allows you to actually go in quickly after the fact into SQL Management Studio and make those login changes directly. So if you decide to use a UI, during the actual installation, you're going to select the management server database and the reporting server database. Even though the reporting server database is technically optional, I encourage going ahead and setting up both databases when you're setting up your environment. That way, if you decide later on down the road that you want to use the reporting service, the database will already be there. Of course, if you decide to actually go through the scripts, the scripts are actually found in the extracted installation media, and we'll look at those here in a second. Now, once you actually set up the database in advance, then all the AVI administrator will have to do, assuming everything is set up and the appropriate security principles are placed in the database security and, of course, the SQL login, all you will need to do is specify that SQL name. And, of course, if the SQL server is residing on a named instance as opposed to a default instance, then you can actually use the custom instance name variable. And then, of course, the default management server database is AVI management. If that is different, you'll need to be aware of that. And of course, the default reporting database is the AVI reporting. So let's walk through the data store. So first and foremost, if you decide that you actually want to install the AVI databases using SQL scripts, SQL scripts, you will need to extract these from the actual server installation media using the /layout /layout dir switches. We have an excellent TechNet article and a blog article on doing that as well. When you actually extract the scripts will be located in two separate directories, one for the reporting database and one for the management database. And again, for critical permissions, you're going to need to actually go in and put in the appropriate security principles by editing the actual file directly. And it's important to know that you're going to actually have to put in the SIDs. So you're going to have to convert the actual friendly names to security identifiers. Now, if you use a UI, which I prefer, the UI is great because it allows you to then go into the actual SQL database directly and add and configure things as needed. And you'll notice that I've actually had to go in here and add in specific additional accounts. Normally, all you need to be concerned with are the actual computer accounts, but in some cases, if you're using, for example, service accounts, as we mentioned earlier, you might want to put in service accounts as specific logins as well. And of course, you're going to need logins for the AVI administrators, and each one of these logins is going to have its own specific requirements. And if you actually set the, if you actually do the installation using the UI, you have less chance of error for this actually occurring.
And is it traditionally the AVI administrator that does this, or would it be the database administrator that would run the scripts or run the UI?
It's usually going to be the SQL administrator.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're going to want to make sure that the SQL administrator has all the appropriate group names and computer accounts and any service accounts that are needed to ensure that the management service will be accessible, because some of these problems will not rear their ugly head necessarily upon the installation of the management service. For example, the management service installation could work perfectly, but once we're finished with it, then we find that, hey, I'm pulling up the management console and it's not authenticating me, or I'm pulling up the management console and it's not giving me permission to add packages. We might hit those problems later on down the road.
So you get friendly with your SQL administrator is the point, I think.
Correct, but as we will discover, once we have all this stuff in place, in many cases, we won't have to do too much bothering of our SQL administrators as long as the databases are properly kept up and the services are running. Yes. So let's recap. In this module, we primarily discussed preparation and setting up all the necessary configuration in advance for a successful deployment. We went over Active Directory accounts and setting up Active Directory, our OUs, our service accounts, potentially our managed service accounts, our groups, access groups especially. We also went over content permissions and how to properly ensure that the content shares are set up with regards to administrators and AppV users. And then most importantly, we discussed database pre-configuration, especially in those environments where the SQL administrators are going to control everything and going to want to control everything. So the options for pre-configuring the databases, both the management and the reporting databases in advance, either using the UI or using the configuration scripts.
Great, so module 2 is next.
Module 2 is next. We're going to dive into the services.
Hope you can stick with us.